Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
The Blue Collar BS podcast helps blue collar business owners like you build a business that'll thrive for decades to come by turning that blue collar BS into some blue collar business solutions.
In this episode, you're going to learn about future-proofing your business through multiple generations, the value beyond the paycheck, what instant gratification does not mean to you, and parents and the industry are part of the solution.
Our guest today is Jake Hall, the manufacturing millennial who shares his passion and concern for the manufacturing world, taking advantage of being the first in the room to become the expert. We hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to Blue Collar BS, Brad. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm fantastic, Mr. Stephen Doyle, as we are recording here this week. This is the week of our 7th anniversary of us being together, Mr. Doyle.
Wow, that sounds so wrong right now. How
do you recognize that we've been together 7 years in some way, shape, or form?
Wow.
And when I say together, I mean in the same capacity of working together, not like together together.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the clarification, because I'm just gonna get ready to clarify. But yeah, it is 7 years this week when we met in San Diego for our certification class. So
yep. And yes, watching the timid Stephen Doyle trying to answer questions was hilarious. Hilarious. It was awesome. It's your PTSD, but that's okay.
It is my PTSD, asswife. Way to bring it up on the show.
It's all good.
Vulnerability. It is. So, Brad, who do we have on the show today?
We are blessed today to have Jake Hall, who is known as the manufacturing millennial, which might give it away, as an advocate for automation, skilled trades, and the further worker by helping revolutionize the way people and companies present through social media and adopt new technology. He's got a ton of followers, does a ton of content. He's a advocate for getting young people and getting any people into construction trades technology. We are blessed to have him here today in his busy schedule. Thank you, Jake Hall, for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here, guys. I'm excited to have a conversation today.
Awesome. Can't wait to see where this goes.
just the pre-show alone, right?
Exactly.
But before we get started, we ask everybody this question, and we don't want to assume anything. But Jake, which generation do you belong to / fit in with?
I am part of the millennial generation. So millennials, I think right now, are between the ages of 40 and 24. I think is where millennials are falling. I'm 34. So I fall pretty much split right in the middle of the generation.
It depends on your definition. There's things all over the place. So for us, we have the millennials going to 27.
Millennia is in Gen Z starts at 26.
Yeah, 1997 was the common connection, right? And that holy cow piece is the biggest thing that I find with owners. When you go, hey, Gen Z, you know those kids that used to be in like third grade? Yeah, they're 26 years old now and they're entering the workforce, and they're our biggest opportunity in the workforce to allow the boomers to retire and transfer knowledge. So
exactly.
Right. So yes.
So as you've self-identified yourself as the millennial in manufacturing, leading automation, let's start down the journey of how did you actually get started down that, being being as young as you are, and Brad being as old as he is, seeing as many things as he's seen, because he's such a boomer in this area.
Whatever.
How did you get started down this journey?
Yeah. You know, I'll start at the beginning, where I started in the industry. So 16 years old, first job, going into my junior year of high school, I had the opportunity to have a summer job and go work for a manufacturer. So worked for a small company at the time called JR Automation. They're a lot bigger now than I think 5,000 employees, and did like a $1.6 billion acquisition a while back. So they're not small anymore, but at the time they were, and I did a lot of the shop grunt work. I swept the floors. I wiped down and blew off a lot of the manual mills and the CNC equipment. I probably smelled way too much acetone when wiping down metal parts, either going into welding or going into paint. But it was a great experience for me. I was able to be around a lot of engineers, a lot of machine builders, a lot of just leaders in the space to understand what manufacturing had to offer, all the different components, and then see at the time a lot of cool technology that was beginning to evolve within the manufacturing space back in 2005, 2006. So did that, was involved with high school robotics, did the first robotics program, coached the Lego Leagues, was involved with, you know, a bunch of other STEM stuff, but went to Grand Valley here in West Michigan. And I went after my manufacturing engineering degree was the approach that I did. It was interesting, you know, when I met with my guidance counselor, I remember this, my junior year, said, hey, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to build stuff. I want to, you know, get involved. I like work with my hands. I like first robotics because, you know, we designed the robots, we fabricated them, built them together. I said, great, you're going to go into engineering. And it was interesting at the time when I look back is I wasn't a 4.0 student by any means. So it wasn't like I was a straight A student where like, hey, go right into college because you're going to get a full ride. You know, I got a couple scholarships here and there, but it maybe covered 10% of my total costs. So it was one of those things where like a local community college or a skilled trades program wasn't even suggested. So went to college, got the 4-year engineering degree, got a couple of other degrees along the way. From there, graduated and went into automation distribution. So didn't do engineering stuff. It went more into the sales side of things, but we sold vision systems, robotics, PLCs, motion control, all the different types of components that go into custom automation equipment that
all
go
in factories. All the cool shit you wish your FRC team had available to you.
Exactly.
To be able to run the games.
Exactly. So it was great. You know, it was probably one of the best jobs. I think it's still one of the best jobs any young professional could have coming out of there is they go into a distributor because they're in so many different companies looking at different products and oftentimes they're always solving problems, right? You're going in there to sell your product, to solve a problem that your customer, your client, or an engineer needs. So your diversity of knowledge and your portfolio of solutions just ramps up really quickly working in the distribution field. But, you know, continuing with the story. So I did that for 7 years. And when I went later on and started attending this conference called AHTD, which was the Association of High Technology Distribution. So it's all the different distributors across the U.S. come to this event twice a year. And one of the speakers there was talking about how do you future-proof your business for the next generation? And I found it really ironic where they were talking about future-proofing your business as all these business owners are there in distribution, yet no one there was from the next generation attending the event. So I figured, well, geez, I'm the only person there under the age of 40 that's attending this event. There's not any millennials here, which is ironic because we're talking about millennials and Gen Zs, yet no one here is doing it. So the name, the manufacturing millennial, kind of stuck. I said, hey, I'm a millennial. I'm very outspoken. I'm very unapologetic when it comes to my thoughts and how the industry is currently being run.
Just like most millennials, we're doing, it's okay.
You know, what we're doing, right, we're doing wrong. And you know, that's who I am. But the change really didn't happen until spring of 2020 when the pandemic started to go and working in outside sales for another company at the time, you know, I couldn't go and visit people in person. So I figured I have to go online to try and connect with all these engineers to talk about products, talk about solutions, what we're doing. So I started just to share more content on LinkedIn, talking about, you know, the industry, new technologies, the workforce, talking more about generational traction, cultural within the industry, why new generations not doing what we're doing, you know, within manufacturing or other industries. So the brand really took off, grew a couple thousand followers the first year. After that, you know, it was another 10,000, 20,000. Now where I am today, I think across all the platforms, I'm approaching, you know, right around 100,000 followers across everything. And really it's just focused on skilled trades, workforce, technology, digital solutions, robotics, automation, and really, you know, what I feel like talking about that day in a post that's relevant to the industry in some aspects. So
welcome to our show. That's what we do here.
Welcome to our show.
And so March of this year, I went full-time manufacturing millennial just because I do a lot of keynote presentations. I speak at a lot of trade shows and associations or directly inside manufacturers. You know, I'll go and speak at their corporate event and meet with their HR team or their marketing team. And I'll talk about this is the characteristics. This is the culture that next generations are looking for. And this is how you can future-proof, you know, and coming from a millennial, you know, granted, there's a whole other generation below us now with the Gen Z's, but I feel like I very much am great because I have a lot of mentalities of how I was raised from an older generation perspective, but understand the younger generation, what they're looking for beyond just a paycheck, you know, for example. Right.
So, you know, you got that high school job, you know, when you were 16, that was the start of a culture change that was going on inside manufacturing to move away from dark, dirty, and dangerous and into clean environments and those type of things. The hazing may not have been quite as appropriate. I'm going to guess
it was still
yeah. there. So as you've progressed now to be full-time manufacturing millennial, and you are the millennial generation kind of stuck in that middle section. Mm-hmm. You got a generation behind, you get two generations above. What are the two or three things that are sticking out as pain points for most organizations today to recognize that, hey, we got four generations working?
Yeah. And you know, I think from a manufacturing outlook, one of the biggest pain points is the perception that the industry still has to a lot of generations, right? Manufacturing is still viewed in a lot of areas as a dark, dirty, dull, dangerous industry. That the jobs left in the 80s and 90s and went overseas, that, you know, their parents worked in the manufacturing and came back, you know, looking dirty. You know, they were all their clothes were dirty. All of, you know, they worked Saturdays. They got pulled into a bunch of overtime. You know, pay was good. I mean, manufacturing still for an hourly job is still one of the higher paid industries out there. But I think, you know, from a job perspective, it was one of those perceptions where when my parents' generation started raising us, they said, I don't want you to go in manufacturing. I want you to go get a four-year degree, because everything was being sold as go get a four-year degree, you'll be successful, because in their generation, a four-year degree was not the norm. So the people who got it immediately reached a certain level of success and opportunity in a lot of cases. However, my generation now, which the average student graduating with a four-year degree graduates with about $33,000 of student debt. And to be honest with you, most education degrees now don't teach you a lot, you know, in a lot of aspects. It's a lot of memorization. It's a lot of stuff that's out there, you know, and don't mean wrong. There's a lot of very valuable STEM degrees out there, like medical Correct. And engineering and all this. Yes. But I'm talking about what I call the GED of a four-year degree, which is a business degree or a social degree or a communications degree. Everybody gets those degrees. And I know a ton of people who I grew up with that got those degrees that don't have any value in what they bring. And so all of a sudden now these students are graduating with X amount of dollars in student debt. And they felt that they were completely lied to, because they said, hey, I'm going to be successful when I graduate with a degree. Now they can't, they're not marketable. They're working at Starbucks. They're doing an hourly job where they have a master's degree and they can't make more than $16 an hour. You know, so what I'm getting to is the perception of what people think is real is not actually what the industry is. So the industry isn't dark, dirty, dull, and dangerous. Yeah. Head to Gary, Indiana, where steel manufacturing is happening still. Yes, it is. But that's a small silo of what automation, technology, and manufacturing is these days, where it's the same thing with skilled trades. Skilled trades for so long was, you go into that degree to, you know, and you can't do anything else. And all of a sudden now, I know welders who are making more than engineers. Yes. I know more skilled tradespeople who are starting their own companies, hiring their next apprentice, who now I know a guy who's 32 years old. He has 14 people working from him now. He lives in $1 million house, and he's just got he started off as an apprentice. And then you go over here and you're still talking with engineers who are still paying off student debt 10 years ago, you know, yes. And so it's one of those things where the perception of manufacturing is old, dark, dirty. It's ancient. And the perception is that you can't go and be successful in the industry unless you have a 4-year degree, which is completely false as well. Because now all of a sudden people can go and not even go to college, become part of a vocational school, go part of a community college, graduate with a 2-year apprentice degree and, robotics technician or PLC programmer or a machinist or a CNC programmer, or go to a Haas or a Fanuc or a KUKA training class, and all of a sudden your debt is hardly anything. And so that's the big thing. So that's the perception of the industry is a huge issue. The other big issue as well is just goes right back to the parents. Parents have the best impact for their kids' generation to get them aligned with how they're going to be successful. And it sucks in a lot of ways because a lot of kids these days don't even have two parents growing up. So right. you have a single mom or a single dad who is trying to, my parents are divorced, and you have a single mom and a single dad just trying to get through life. And they say, oh yeah, I'm hearing this, so just go and pursue this, rather than trying to investigate and teach them, hey, there's risk when you graduate with $30,000 in debt, because you're going to have this thing you're going to have to pay off for. They don't even think about it, until it's right. way too late. So, the other thing with manufacturing is that the other thing that I would say that manufacturers face is just the cultural change that new generations of millennials, of Gen Zs and younger millennials want to see. And that's just value beyond the paycheck. In a sense, right. where before you look at the Gen X generation, the baby boomer generation, Brad, Steve, you want to guess how many jobs the average baby boomer had their entire career?
One,
two,
it's three. I mean, well, we'll get there, but the average, job.
Once I got out of high school. Two.
Yeah. But it's one of those things, the three jobs. Right. Anyone want to guess what the average amount of jobs a millennial will have by the age of 30?
10.
By the time they're 30, I'm going to say it's 12.
Yeah, 12. 12.
Really?
So, all of a sudden you look at, it's not industry related, it's just generational related. And yep. so when we look at how do we attract a generation into an industry that's viewed as old or ancient compared to the .com and the tech and the app industry that's out there, it's the culture of the company in a lot of cases as well, where we got to add more value to a company beyond just a paycheck. We got to create purpose. We got to focus on the impact that they're going to create. We have to make sure that manufacturing is much more, I guess you could say, focused on individual contribution rather than just big picture product.
Jake. I'm not going to go tell you thank you just because you fucking showed up and did your job today. That's what you're supposed to do. How can I come and say thank you for that?
Well, here's the thing. I don't have to come and work for you to show up at your job, because I can go work for Amazon Flex, get paid $24 an hour, yep. decide when I want to work and decide when I don't want to work. So,
correct.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're paying me, but I don't have to work for you. And that's right. the whole thing now, is because here's the thing. 8 million people now use Lyft, Uber Eats, Grubhub on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis that yep. no one used 10 years ago, because those jobs didn't even exist. Those right. applications didn't even exist. So the mindset of, oh, show up and do your time is such a foreign, it needs to be such a foreign thought process now, because mm-hmm. Next generations can sit in their car, choose what hours they want to work. And Brad, here's the thing. Yeah, you can show up for your work, but are you going to pay me every single day after showing up for work? Or are you going to pay me every other week? Because I can go on Amazon and I can get a paycheck deposited in my account at the end of every single day.
Correct.
Yep.
So it's one of those things where don't moan and groan when you can't put in the same opportunities that younger generations have. Now, here's the issue that millennials and Gen Zs have. They are so much embedded on instant gratification of do good, get, that now they have a really hard time looking beyond long-term process. And this is where manufacturers, in my opinion, still have, or people in the construction industry or whatever, the blue-collar industry, as we call it, have. It's leadership. It's mentoring. It's career growth opportunity. Yes. Because while Amazon can pay you at the end of every shift, working for Amazon for 5 years, working for Grubhub for 5 years, you're not going to get promoted. You're not going to see advancements within the company because you sat in that car for 3 years driving around 1,000 customers. You're never going to get that opportunity. We as an industry have that opportunity to give. However, it's not well communicated and it's not expressed enough to show impact beyond a daily or a weekly or a monthly job.
It's not even communicated at all. Not even communicated poorly is a particularly in a trade environment, right? There's right. How that framer that might have six guys working for him. There's no way that framing guy has a career plan for you know, Aaron, the 18-year-old guy that just started to say, okay, what do I get to look like in the next 3 years? He has no plan for that other than just go to the next job, go to the next job, go to the next job. And Aaron's not going to stick around very long because that appreciation, those things. Yeah. He might like that I got something and I can build it and I can see it at the end of the day. However, he's going to go find the framing leader that's going to fulfill those other needs or fulfill those other parts of what his desire and drive is.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, too, that I really want to focus on is, you know, people always say, well, how do small companies compete with larger companies in that area? And I think the big thing is we need to realize is a majority of the employees that you hire on are local. And here's the facts. I'm going to use manufacturing just because that's the industry that I'm most knowledgeable on.
Absolutely. 98.6%
of manufacturers in the United States classify as a small to medium-sized business. 98.6%. So when you look at, you're not going to be able to have the same benefits as a Tesla or a GM or a SpaceX, all the really flashy, fancy manufacturing companies that are out there. But you know what? I know hundreds around this area that are involved with their local robotics program, that are involved with their local STEM program, that open up the doors to have a community night where they invite their parents and they say, hey, listen, your kid might not be made out to go to a four-year degree, but you know what? He can come to my shop during the summertime, have an internship, and we're going to teach him how to read calipers. We're going to teach him how to do some manual milling. And all of a sudden, that individual impact from a very small scale can have tremendous growth over long term. But the biggest thing that manufacturers are not doing well is getting involved with their local communities, getting involved with their local educational centers. Because here's the thing, the companies that are getting involved with local co-op programs or internships through the local universities or community colleges are doing great because they're pulling the best talent out of there. Because they're involved. So when they call up the dean of engineering or the professor who's running the machining class and say, hey, I need some guys, they're going to say, oh, yeah, grab Tim or grab Stephanie or grab Jessica because they're doing great and they're going to pull that talent out there. But if you're not involved with where the talent is, you're lost. And so that's the other big thing to answer your question, Brad, on what are manufacturers and companies doing wrong? They're not engaged in the local talent community.
Correct. Right. And you're not the first person to say that. We've had several other guests on the show that is how they have found their talent pool and have found significant success for their business and in their community. Scott Forge is one of those companies that comes to mind. They're partnered with McHenry College and all they do is just bring talent in from McHenry Community College and just continue to drive. And no matter what anybody wants to say, shop floor guys are the most knowledgeable guys that you will ever meet, and they are some of the smartest dudes ever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hey, Jake, I do have a question for you. Yeah. Since you obviously see a lot of trends, what would you say are like the top three trends for the younger millennials and Gen Zs wanting to get into the trades? What do you see are those trends that they're looking for?
Trends. So what are the trends that younger generations are looking for when getting into trades?
Yep.
I think one of the things that I'm seeing the most of is what does pay and reimbursement look like is one of them, right? Because people are conscious, focused on money. They want to know how they're going to get reimbursed. So like for me, I'm seeing a lot of people are coming in and say, hey, come and work for us, put in 40 hours a week. We're going to pay you $14,500 a year and educational reimbursement that's going to go to your night classes or weekend classes or classes that you have during the week. So like that's one trend that I'm seeing. You know, another trend that I'm seeing as well is how are companies leveraging technology to meet in the middle where trades has been viewed as an older profession, yet technology is always driving new solutions. So how can I use my phone? How can I use projected augmented reality or AR or VR to do training, to grow? You know, for example, Lincoln Electric has some really cool AR-based training goggles, right? Where you go out there, you throw on, you know, an Oculus headset or something along those lines, and you have a TeachPad and it's teaching you how to do welding. You know, are you adopting technology? That's the other trend. I would say the third trend that we're seeing is the cultural view of what other people would think of the industry. And I think it's one of those things where we need as an industry to do a better job showcasing the impact of what we do. You know, for example, no one thinks about the HVAC person until your heating goes out in the winter, or your AC stops working in the summer, or, you know, that plumber all of a sudden when your toilet's backed up or your garbage disposal's, you know, leaking a bunch of water, you know, going onto your floor, right? No one thinks about trades until they need the trades.
Right.
And I think what we need to do as an industry is doing a better job vocalizing the true impact that trades or just the industry in general, if it's manufacturing or construction, has on people's daily lives.
Yeah.
And if we can see that, then the trend is for next generations, they're going to want to be a part of something because all of a sudden they're a part of something much bigger than themselves. And I think, you know, going back to just society in general, kids love gaming in large groups and being a part of Discord and Steam chat rooms because while they're focused on something very specifically, they like to be a part of something big.
Yes.
And that could be like, you can look at Reddit or forums or anything like that, right? They like to be a part of a group that has the same passion because it's bigger than just themselves. And I think that's another trend that we're seeing in the industry.
Awesome. Yeah. And with everybody, you know, think about road construction back in the day. You're on road construction, all the cool things you got to see, now everybody's head's down on their phone.
Yeah.
So no one pays attention to what's going on behind the orange barrels anymore. And if you look at all the DOT work that's happened across the country, then you think about all the dirt that's been moved, all the concrete that's been poured, all the welds that have been made, all that stuff it's pretty cool stuff. And we're missing out on the opportunity to show and showcase where things are happening and how things are happening. And
exactly.
Nobody's going to go and go through the industrial park and say, hey, this is made here, made here, made here, because they don't care.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's the big thing. And that's why we as an industry need to change the way we use social media. For example, right? For people's social media's pages, their YouTube, their LinkedIn, their Instagram, they need to be far less focused on the product that they make and focus more on the people that are within that company. It blows my mind when people post line cards on their LinkedIn page thinking anyone actually cares. Right?
Right.
You know,
the website with the parking lot and the picture of the building.
Right. You know, the one thing you click on the website right away, and all of a sudden it pulls up, our company has been around 66 years and it's a third generation. Like, no one cares, you know, and maybe there is value to that because there is focused on the culture that's being created within the company.
Right.
But you need to do better than that. You need to showcase the people. You need to showcase the person that's not going to be inherited to the company because their parents didn't own the company, but they want to know, how is that company going to help me succeed and grow? You know what? Maybe it's Jessica, who started off as a machine operator, who then became a floor technician, who then went and became a maintenance, you know, assistant, who then became a maintenance shift operator, who then became, you know, a floor plant manager, who then became an assistant director of operations, who now became the VP.
Yep.
That's the story you want to highlight because that's the realistic and actual opportunity that can be achieved through growth within a company. Yet for so long, I don't see, hey, here's a person who started here and got to here. It's check out my new product. And that's what we're missing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if people want your energy and enthusiasm in their buildings to come and talk to their leaders or talk to their organizations or just find out more about you, where do people find you? It shouldn't be that hard, but where do I'll let you tell us.
So a couple of things. One is themanufacturingmillennial.com. You know, find on my website, reach out to me there, or LinkedIn. You know, come on my platform, see the content I'm talking about, connect with me on LinkedIn. Just search Jake Hall, probably the first one that pops up. If not, just search Jake Hall Manufacturing, and you're going to find me. I'm wearing a blue Chicago Cubs hat with a blue background.
That's too bad. Gotta steal a manager. You gotta steal a manager to win. It's okay.
Wow.
Well, we just take care of them, you know. Wait, how many playoff games did they win this year?
How many did you win this year?
Doesn't mean we won the same.
Right. Exactly. So you're paying more for the similar results.
All right, yet the Cubs' expectations to win were here, while the Brewers' expectations to actually do something were here.
You're right. That's so funny.
What's your point?
But my point is, it doesn't matter anymore because we're paying players $1 billion a year to actually only get paid $2 million per year, put the rest on deferment for tax evasion. And that's how every single future star player is going to get paid for, is they're going to get paid a very minimum with a huge chunk later when they'll move to a state with zero income tax. And all of a sudden, the Dodgers are going to sell their program in 2035. So then they don't have to worry about the Ohtani deal. That's what's happening.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
All right. Well, Jake, we thank you so much for your time today and your energy and your passion for what you're doing for the industry and connecting with that millennial generation and younger to support that. And our hopes are that the old bastards like myself are actually paying attention and understanding and learning, because without the younger millennial crowd and without the Gen Zs, we don't have businesses to do anything with. So thank you so much for what you do.
Absolutely, guys. Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right. Thanks. Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.